Nightbirds. Welcome to the Couple Speak Relationship Forum on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Susan Lager, a psychotherapist and coach and founder of the Couple Center and Couple Speak in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, where I come to you live amidst yet another snowstorm on alternate Wednesdays at 10 p.m. I've got a terrific 45-minute episode tonight, January 26th, called Avoid Money Wars in Your Marriage. Joining me as my co-host and guest is Jean Leone, a certified public accountant, a financial advisor, and founder of Leone, McDonald, and Roberts in Wolfboro, New Hampshire. This financial guru, and that's what he is, a guru, is also an adjunct professor at Bentley University, where he teaches corporate finance. We'll be talking all about couples and money tonight, so it should be fun. First, some technical issues for you callers. Your toll-free call-in number is 877-497-9046. All callers will be muted unless you have a question or a comment. Then it's just like in school. To raise your hand, you press 1 and you'll be on the queue to be on the air. When you're finished with your comment, I'll mute you again and you press 1 again to lower your hand. If you're a very talkative type and you have more questions or comments at a later point, just press 1 again. All right, so hopefully that's pretty clear to everybody. And again, it's the number is 877-497-9046. So, Jean,
yes.
I'm very glad you're here. You don't sound so good. You said you had the flu?
I think I have. Well, I have something anyway. Last night I got it. When I got home from work, I started, shivers, chills, fever. I went to work today, and then I felt a little better today. But now, as the night goes on, I feel a little worse. But we'll be okay.
Okay. Well, I'll try. I'll try not to be mean, or I'll try to field mean questions or difficult questions for you.
That you'll be all right.
I'm wondering if part of the sickness for you, or is some of the stress related to tax time. You're right in the crunch now. It's a few weeks before you start getting the whole onslaught, right?
Yes, and in fact, this year it'll even be later because they didn't change the tax law till the very end of December, so people who itemize their deductions and a few other things will not be able to file, I don't think, until about mid-February.
What I heard. Yeah, I heard February 15th
right.
on TV. So it means that your season is expanded, right?
No, just crunched.
Crunched. Oh,
yeah.
Boy. Yeah, so even more stress.
Right.
Oh, that's not easy. When I get that big packet of stuff each year to prepare for taxes, I generally feel a mixed sense of dread and anxiety and all kinds of nasty things about, I have to get all organized now and I have to put my whole life in order. But also what happens for me when I get that packet is it makes me think about the couples I work with and the couples I know and how the kinds of issues that come up for couples around money. And that's our show tonight, Couples and Money and How to Avoid Money Wars in Marriage. I've really seen it all in my practice, and I've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I often think about if people just had a little bit of a tutorial on some of the basic guidelines, things that would help them do better in their marriages around money, there'd be so many headaches avoided. And I'm wondering if you see that in your practice.
Yes. I think that, I've been thinking about it since you asked me to be on. And I think that just basic financial smarts, which would apply to an individual, would also apply to a marriage.
Okay.
In other words, never extend yourself, beyond your means, things like that. Don't run
mm-hmm.
up your cards, things like that. I always say my own thought is never put on a credit card something you can't pay in 30 days.
Right.
I mean, most of the stuff you put on a credit card, you don't have to have.
Yeah, you know, like, that's right.
Save for television. When you save the money, you know, then put it on the credit card, pay it in 30 days and get the mileage. But other than that.
And do you see couples doing that more, maybe because one gives the other one permission to do it, that they're more likely to get into that?
I think you have to have financial honesty in a relationship, just like your relationship is built on trust for everything. I mean, when you're,
mm-hmm.
and I think you have to have financial trust too. So you've
mm-hmm.
You got to be financially honest, and if you're not, you can obviously run into problems.
I see a lot of that in my practice. I've actually worked with a number of individuals who are wrestling with whether to get out of a marriage because they're finding out about unbelievable secrets that their spouse has been keeping from them, that they thought it was sort of open teamwork and it was an even playing field. And as they're moving forward in the marriage, suddenly they're finding out there are little hints of accounts that they never knew about, or they find out that their spouse reallocated funds or made somebody else a beneficiary of something. And it's kind of horrifying for me as a therapist to listen to it and to watch it. The kind of things people do to each other financially in marriages are beyond imagination.
Well, I guess one thing you'd have to do is you both have to stay involved in the finance.
Yeah.
You can't let one spouse do everything, and then that spouse might not be doing the right thing. I know I had an instance where the wife inherited $250,000, and the husband decided to day trade it.
Mm-hmm.
And he turned it from $250,000 to like $100,000 in about 2 months.
Yeah.
Well,
so,
why? And first of all, he's a teacher, so what the heck would he know about day trading anyway?
Right. So
go ahead.
He's kind of making a decision about what he's going to do with it, and her head is in the sand?
Evidently, yeah.
Do you see a lot of that in people who come to you to do their finances?
I don't. You don't see a lot. You see it once in a while. You can see. You know, you've got to stay involved. I have an instance now where the couple got divorced, and the wife took care of the books, and lo and behold, none of the payroll tax returns had been filed for about a year.
Oh,
and
wow.
He was totally unaware of it because he wasn't at the financial end of it, and they owed $100,000 or something in payroll tax.
Right. Well, so you see when one person keeps their head in the sand, I've seen that too. One person keeps their head in the sand and they kind of leave the work of the finances to the other person. Part of what I've seen is that it's often, it's less often these days. It's less often the wife, because often wives run the bills and do the money, but where one person will be in a kind of denial or avoidance about it, and they'll assume that the other person is managing it, and the other person is running their own show, or they're not particularly equipped to do it.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's true. And I think there's a lot of financial illiteracy in the country. People are basically, a lot of people are just financially illiterate.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes through to a marriage, and then when you get in financial trouble, and if it's one spouse that causes financial trouble, then obviously
mm-hmm.
there's friction, because you know the other spouse is upset because the one is not obviously what would be the word? The other one has not cared for the finances as they should.
Right. So you see people in your practice also where they're just not tuned into the latest information about how to manage their money, or they're not paying attention to their own finances.
That's right. I mean,
and it becomes a runaway train, it sounds like.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you look at automobiles. People say, well, I'll buy an automobile because there's no interest. I'll finance it over 6 years. Well, why would you ever finance a car over 6 years?
Well, I've made that mistake.
Whether there's interest or not, the day you walk out the door, you're upside down, and you're probably upside down for 6 years.
Absolutely.
I always my own thought was, if I can't pay for it in 3 years, I can't afford that particular automobile.
Okay.
And so you should buy the automobile you can afford. That would be
Yeah. So it sounds like one of the worst mistakes people make is kind of confusing, beside being just kind of ignorant about what the long term effects are of making certain decisions. It sounds like you're saying that for people to not pay attention to what's within their means, they kind of lose sight of, and I see this a lot in my practice, of the difference between wants and needs.
That's correct, yes. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you look at what we all have materially, it's quite a bit. Even those who don't think they have a lot, if you count the number of televisions in a house, the number of automobiles in the garage, in the driveway, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, all the things you have, all the clothes you have, everything we have quite a bit.
Yeah.
And most people could probably do with a lot less in the way of material things that they can't really afford.
Right.
And they don't really need.
And I know.
So want versus need.
Yeah, I see it happening so early also. We have a 23-year-old, and I don't remember how old he was when he started getting those credit card offers. I think he was still... He probably was 18, maybe he was younger. I don't know what the law says is necessary, but the 0% financing deals and one credit card after another. I know when he got to college, he was really inundated with them, and I don't think I just think that the whole society, the whole culture, really encourages massive overspending and mindless spending. And I think if you don't get to your kids really early and tell them, do you know what this means if you do the 0% thing? It means that you have to pay the whole thing off. Otherwise, you're really screwed.
That's right.
So
if you look at
early,
if you give it, it does start early. I'll take an example of my daughter. When she graduated college, she went to work, and they have a 401k. And I told her, I said, well, max your 401k. You know, whatever the employee will match to. So I think if she puts in 6%, they match 25% of it. And I said, max it. And she said, Dad, I can't afford it. I'm not making enough money. I said, if you never have it, you can afford it. She's never had it. So she's been working for the company for, I don't know, 2.5 years maybe. So she's put in $5,000. The company's put in $2,000. And the market has increased by, I don't know, let's see, I think she has 11,000, so the rest is market increase. So she has $11,000. Now,
that
percent of her pay that would have been just spent on probably not much of anything over the last 2 years, she wouldn't have that. It's not like you had $11,000 to spend all at once. It's, you know, you're putting away a little bit every single week when you're paid, or every biweekly, however you're paid. So she's building this little nest egg. So she's 20, I don't know, 6, and she's got $11,000 in her 401k, and you know that's pretty good. And if you can get yourself disciplined at a young age to do that, you're going to be a lot better off in the end.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So it really requires, it sounds like, the parents teach their kids that not only do they that they model it, they do it with themselves. They have forethought, but that they model it and they bring their kids on board very early on, so kids know what they're dealing with.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think the whole thing is often shrouded in mystery. People just kind of assume that if the money is out there, financing is available, it's just okay just to buy things, and that if you just coast along, you'll be fine. I think I think it relates to a sense of immediacy that we all have in America, that we're a kind of soundbite society. We want things now. People are very impulsive, and the whole culture supports that. It's much harder to save or to allocate funds or to do without. And I think that requires discipline. A lot of discipline.
And I think the key is to do it at an early age.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if you can discipline yourself when you're young, you'll be fine.
Right, right.
And then over a period of time, the people who do it are the people who win.
Right. I look at some of these young people now, and I think, how come I don't ever remember having these lessons growing up. I don't even remember learning how to balance a checkbook. And I know I had to learn a lot of this on my own. And then you develop these scripts about where you're competent or not. And if it's all shrouded in a kind of mystery, and I think it makes it a lot more complicated. So it sounds like really getting to kids young and modeling it with each other very early is absolutely critical.
It's changed a lot, this generation versus our generation, in that when we were young, I don't believe there even were credit cards. I can remember. I can remember not having any credit cards. You paid
right.
cash for everything. So credit wasn't quite as easy. You know, and you know, if you wanted to buy something, you had to save. And when you saved the money, you bought it.
Right.
You know, the advent of the credit, and everybody has credit, and marriages causes a lot of problems. Right.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Now, what do you see as the worst, the best, and the worst financial pieces of teamwork that you encounter in your practice in marriage?
Well, let's face it, I think, now you're the counselor, so you tell me if I'm wrong, Susan, but marriage is built on trust, right? So
yeah.
You have to trust your spouse. And if you're not honest with your spouse, it's not going to work, whether it's infidelity, whether it's money, or no matter what it is. So I think that the thing to do is to both stay involved. Both, you know, if you're both working, you know what each other make. You know what the income is. I mean, make yourself a budget. You'll see what the money's coming in, and then you don't have then one spouse doesn't have the opportunity to go set up accounts all over the place if, you know what each other make and you're both involved with it.
Yeah, I see that play out a lot where one spouse will be complaining that there is no transparency, and it's generally the person who makes more money it's always the person who makes more money who has more power in the relationship. If they're the one managing the money and making the primary decisions about it. But what I see is that when it's not an open system, when one person says, don't worry, it'll be fine, or just don't spend so much, and they're not really clear, they haven't sat down, and I'll ask the question as though, and they'll look at me like coming out of, God, Gene, you sound like you're dying.
No,
okay.
Yeah, I'm fine.
But I'll ask the question like,
am I walking into the phone? I'm trying to get onto the other side. But
oh, yeah. Well, you're wheezing, but it's okay. You're a sport, Gene. I mean, to get on the air when you have the flu, I really give you credit for it. But let me know if you need an ambulance, okay? I'm on Skype, so
911.
Okay. I think Skype will get to it sooner. But anyway, what I was saying is that what I see is how a lack of transparency can create terrible problems where one spouse who makes most of the money and runs the numbers and manages it is not clear with the other spouse about what do we have available and what is roughly our budget, what do we have to work with and what's enough and what's too much. And then the spouse who's in the dark feels constant anxiety. They feel very powerless. They feel less than in some way, and they're kind of frozen. Is it okay for me to buy this new thing? And why is it okay for you to get that thing when I can't get this? And I see it as a lack of transparency between the two of them, but also a lack of awareness about, well, what are we working with? What are the facts of our financial life? And I know I've made that mistake a lot in my life, and I it never helps. But it sounds like that you see that a lot in your practice.
Oh, yeah.
Just that alone creates problems.
Yeah, obviously our practice isn't, solely on people who have marital problems, and it only comes up when it comes up. But you're right, and I think it's incumbent upon the individual who's making the money. Let's say today it's not always the husband. Let's assume, though, it's a traditional marriage. The old type of traditional marriage where the husband is the worker and the wife stays home with the children, obviously she's not going to be making any money. And so he's making all the money. And you're right, unless he's, I think it's incumbent upon him to be forthright with it.
Yeah.
With his spouse. And this is what we have and this is what we can spend and
right.
budget together. You know, this is what we have. This is what we make.
Right.
And this is what we can spend.
Right.
We can't spend anymore. I just think you're right when you say that one of the problems is people just spend way beyond their means, whether it's a single
yes.
a marriage person or whatever. And that's why we're in the problems we are in this country, including the federal government. Look at everybody,
yeah.
ends. It's soft, you know.
Right.
Just make it easy. We'll just keep printing money and making it
right.
easy.
Right. It trickles down from the top.
Yeah.
I see people using money as a kind of medication, where it's become sort of like the new form of substance abuse.
Yep.
It used to be just drugs and drinking and smoking, and I see couples a lot spending to kind of anesthetize themselves about the problems in their life and their relationship. A lot of the women, I love going into Marshall's and TJ Maxx, I have to admit myself. I love the idea of saving so much money, which is, that's another whole story, how women get seduced into that primarily. But I will often, when I'm there, I'll see people who look like they're in a trance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the stores are designed to put you in a trance, but I get the sense, and maybe I'm projecting, I don't know, but because I see it so much in my practice where it becomes a kind of anesthesia for the couple, they get to avoid other key issues. So they just buy a new toy or they just go on a very fancy, expensive vacation and they avoid some of the key issues that are going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I would imagine you must see that a lot in your practice.
Yeah. Excuse me. I'm surprised at the number of people who are, let's say, in their mid-50s or you know, approaching retirement and that don't have much of anything and have had good jobs their entire life.
Yeah, yeah.
And just, they don't put anything away, the couple.
Right.
And I don't know what's going to happen to them. You know, when they decide to retire, everybody wants to, you know, retire. All of a sudden, they're going to return 65, 66. And they're not going to have much, you know.
Right.
And which is too bad. And
I think
they're disciplined. They just have not disciplined themselves to live within their means.
Right.
And most,
so,
I've been doing this, let's see, oh, my God, I hate to say, since 1968. And I'm going to tell you.
Gene, you're dating yourself here.
I know that. But people who do it right are the people that win. The people who do it right, the people that they don't let the tail wag the dog, they don't let taxes, they do what's right, they make good business decisions, and the taxes fall where they may. They obviously
right.
you do the best you can to reduce the taxes legally.
Right.
But the people who do it right are the people who win in the end. And the people who always try to, you know, skirt the issues, do this, do that, play this game, play that game, they never get ahead.
Yeah, yeah. I see a lot of couples in my practice who are doing very well financially, and I see how it affects how it helps to create some of the other positives in the relationship and how it affects the other things in the relationship that become positive. For instance, a lot of the couples I work with who are very well off are very mindful about where every penny goes, and they, if they're looking at a new house, for instance, they're very mindful about what does that mean in terms of added debt, what's the big picture, how's it going to change the big picture, and when I see people doing it together, it seems to really foster a sense of teamwork, and it doesn't feel. People don't feel like they're having to deprive themselves in the same way when they're making those decisions together and really thinking them out. And then you see how if they're more secure financially, it just affects every other aspect of the relationship. They're happier with each other in a lot of other ways. It's not a panacea, but it certainly can affect the general sense of security and safety in a marriage.
Oh, I think so, sure. If you can, you know, if you're financially sound, obviously life is a lot easier.
Yeah.
And I think our lives today are more complicated financially than they used to be. You know, we never had all this credit. We never, I mean, just go back to, you know, when we were kids. It wasn't as complicated. You know, you had a little house, everybody's mother was home, you went out as a kid, you played, and you went home at night, and it wasn't like it is today, where parents run them all over the place, you know, the mother works, the husband works, you know,
and they
really don't get ahead.
They really get ahead,
I don't know, some of them.
Right,
do.
Right. Well, I remember
nothing wrong with the, don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with the wife having a career, I'm not suggesting that at
right,
all.
It's right.
Good. That's what,
but it is more complex. The whole system is much
but it's,
more
yeah,
complex.
Yeah, it makes everything more complicated today. And I'm not saying the other way was right and this way is wrong. It just makes it a lot more complicated.
Yeah, it does.
And I don't know that couples or people are equipped to deal with that as they should be.
Well, I treat money with in relationships, couples that I work with. Money is, we look at it as important an issue as sex or as socializing or as parenting. It's a key component of the relationship. And there's actually a lot more that's written. I don't know if you've heard about this, about financial infidelity. That's a new term that's been coined. I don't know how long it's been around, but where it's, and I don't know how much it gets cited in divorces, but it certainly is a major presence when either a trust and working together in teamwork or something that feels very unfaithful, like unilateral decisions, secrecy, all that other stuff. Gene, I want to ask you something about, you know, getting to financial infidelity. What's your sense about money and divorce? When we've been talking about couples in committed relationships and some of the best and worst things that they do, I work, and I'm sure you've worked with couples who are getting out of a marriage. They're facing a divorce. It's just not worked out. And I'm wondering, would you say are the worst things that you see couples do when they're getting divorced around money and managing money versus the best things you see?
Well, the best things I see is if it's amiable and they're not really, you know, if they could stay in the same room. I don't, again, you know what the consequences are and what it's like more than I. But if they're amiable and they're just not getting along, the best way to do it, I think, is go to an arbitrator. You put everything on the table, and you split it in half, and off you go. I think that sometimes what I see, and again, let's take it where it's the woman who the husband's working and the woman is at home, and so the wife is mad because the husband's been fooling around. So she gets an attorney. So the attorney starts saying, "What, do you think he's hiding any money?" And then she starts taking out her anger through the attorney at the husband, and then it just drives up legal fees.
Huge.
And it really doesn't make much difference. You're both going to get half.
I've seen couples where I've worked with, it's often I've worked with the wife, and they find out that their husband has been having a very long-standing affair. They're very outraged. They feel very injured. And they try to assuage their sense of injury and victimhood by getting a very high-powered attorney. The attorney then hires, this is a new thing I had never heard of before, a forensic accountant.
Oh, yeah.
So then they get these guys on the deal, and they're spending, they're racking up huge expenses.
Oh, absolutely.
I never even heard of that before. And the saddest thing about it is that in the cases I've seen, it hasn't made one shred of difference.
Right. I mean, let's say, for example, I've had one that just ended, and the husband had some fairly successful businesses worth a lot of money, and he was doing well, and that's what they did. And so if they're hiring a forensic accountant, and we have been doing the accounting, the tax work, and the financial work, that means we had to be committing fraud. So why would we be doing that? Do you follow me?
No.
Because we're doing all the tax returns, and they look at all the tax returns.
So, okay.
I mean, they're basically saying, well, these guys didn't do it right. Well, why would we be doing it wrong? I mean, we're going to risk our license because some guy wants to hide money from his wife?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any
right,
sense.
Right.
So then the funny thing was here, he offered her, a couple million dollars few years ago, and then her lawyer said, no, that's not enough. Then he lost all the businesses. And then as soon as he lost all the businesses, the lawyer said, well, we got to wrap this up because there's no more money.
Wow. So the lawyer was out of there. Yeah.
$100,000 in legal fees. And I mean,
yeah. And I
see that all the time. And in the end, it ends up the same. She gets half, he gets half.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And I live in the tri-state area, New Hampshire, Maine, and Massachusetts. And regardless of the laws of the state, it doesn't look any more beneficial to me to a spouse whose husband has had a long-standing affair, and they generate this very adversarial process. They don't come out, they don't seem to come out any better financially, and it's generally a very extended process. The people who are through with the divorce most amiably and most quickly are the people who settle it on their own, or in my experience, the people who either go to a collaborative lawyer or a mediator.
That's right. That's what I've seen too. If they can keep civil to each other, we've had that happen where an attorney is a mediator. I had a client who was he's very successful, and he just came to me one day. He says, "My wife doesn't want to be married anymore." And I said, "Oh," and he said, "We're going to do it through mediation." So you know, they've been a client for years, so we knew everything they had. So she came in, he came in, we sat at our table in our conference room. We discussed it for a couple hours. Their assets, what should be split, how they should be split. He paid her alimony for 5 years or something. They agreed to it, took it up to the attorney. I think the legal fee was $1,500. This guy was worth several million dollars. Get the divorce for $1,500.
Well, right.
It wouldn't have been any different had they spent $250,000.
No. It's people kind of licking their wounds and just doing retribution. And it literally can be... I have a few couples that didn't make it where a few months later they're divorced because they did it on their own. And I think it's primarily because they did, they were thinking about fairness, but they were also thinking about, they were very mindful about, especially, and this is true for couples who have children, they were mindful about what is our goal for the best possible future relationship. They look to the future if they have kids or if they had any hope of having any other kind of relationship with each other outside marriage. They kind of looked at that as the prize down the road, and they kept their eye on that prize. And in my experience, that makes all the difference in the world. If people say to themselves, let's look at how we proceed now and how that's going to set the tone for the relationship that we're going to have in the future.
Right.
And if they're only thinking of dollars, I think everybody gets screwed.
Oh, absolutely. There's only one winner.
Yeah.
I hope there's no lawyers listening.
Well, hopefully there are some lawyers listening.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that lawyers are all bad, but you can get into a pissing contest.
Yes.
And it's not going to make any difference. And you're just running legal fees because they're just with the time clock going, you know, and it just runs up exorbitant fees, and you don't end up any different.
I know.
And all the time, a guy says, they were getting along. He says, I'll give you half. She says, that's not good enough. So she gets a lawyer. The lawyer starts feeding her all this stuff, and on they go, off they go. $100,000 later, they split it in half.
I mean, yeah, it's pretty tragic. It's unbelievable. Well, I think one piece of good news is that there are more collaborative lawyers. I know just in the Portsmouth area, there are whole teams that are assembled as we speak, and I never even heard of that before. And the number of mediators has risen dramatically. So I think more people are maybe through the horror stories learning from their friends that it just doesn't work the other way. They're trying to go a collaborative route. Now, Gene... to wrap up, because we have about 14 more minutes, and I want to open this up. We do have some callers on the line. If you had three recommendations before you die of the flu, what would your three top recommendations for couples be about money?
I would say, one, you should both be cognizant of what's going on. Work together.
Okay.
And I think unless you're so wealthy – you ought to get a budget together. You ought to both work on the budget. You ought to both watch it. You ought to both watch your money, and you both ought to be involved.
Okay.
Two, I think you have to be honest. It's just, you have to be honest with each other. You have to have financial honesty, just like you would anything else in your marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Be honest about your finances, and you have to be realistic about your finances. What do you have?
Right.
And what you don't have. So if you start spending what you don't have, then you're going to obviously
create
friction in the marriage.
Right. I would add another one. I would say, with my two cents, I would say creating a mutually acceptable teamwork based on who's good at what. So don't allocate to the person who's has a high level of ADD or is very disorganized, very intricate financial things. Divide the labor based on who's skilled at what, but be transparent and make sure you have a deal that's mutually acceptable.
If it only works
for one, it doesn't work.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah.
Obviously, usually one spouse is better at money than the other, so...
Yes, and I think people need to be realistic about who's better at it, but that doesn't mean the other person should be out of the loop, just have a different role with the whole thing.
Right.
So we have some callers, mm-hmm. and I'm wondering if anybody has a question. We have several callers on the line. All you need to do is raise your hand if you have a question, and we can try to answer your question. We may have a bunch of very shy people here. I'm not sure. I don't see anybody asking any questions. So what I would say is if you have any questions about your finances, and I mean, obviously this was just a little introduction, this talk before Gene kicks off. One thing that I think would be really important to do is to go to – wait, we do have a question. Let me just answer this one question here. One second. All right. Hello, caller. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, Dr. Sue. My name is Jessica, and I live in Florida.
Okay.
And I have a question about life insurance. I was wondering if your guest could give us a little input on that.
Life insurance?
Yes.
I don't know. What do you
mean
by
it? I know there's all types of life insurance. There's term insurance, and it's all very confusing, but perhaps that's another show.
I think you're right. It would take forever. There are basically two types. There's term and there's whole life. And the term life insurance, you're just buying the insurance and you're not building up any value. And then there's whole life policies where you're actually you're paying in and you're paying more of a premium, but you're building up a value. Okay, so you're building up a cash surrender value.
Yeah, that's what I have.
You can
right.
use retirement or what have you. But you're right, would take quite a while to discuss.
Oh, would you say that it depends on your age as to what type of insurance you acquire?
Well, I think it would depend on a lot of things, age being one of them. It would depend on your needs. If you're older, you might want to use term because it's cheaper, and insurance is a lot more expensive as you get older because we're not going to last forever, or at least most of us. And I think that also it's on your needs. If you're trying to supplement your retirement, whole life might be a way to go because you're building up a value that you can use.
I see.
Does that help you at all?
Well, I beg your pardon?
Does that help you at all?
Tells me that I need to go and study up on it.
It's not a question you can answer in 2 minutes, put it that way.
I understand.
Right.
Well, Gene, I want to thank you. We're going to have to wrap up soon. I want to thank all you listeners for tuning in. And, Gene, I want to thank you for staying out of bed or getting out of bed long enough to do this show and shedding light on this issue. You're a trooper. I don't know if it's snowing where you are, but I hope you feel better. And I want to let our listeners know that Gene can be reached. His name is Gene Leone. He can be reached at 603-569-1953 at Leone, McDonnell, and Roberts in Wolfboro, New Hampshire. Do you have a website, Gene, or any other place where want to be contacted?
Email, you could email me. That's
okay.
GLeone at lmrpa.com.
And say that again?
GLeone.
Okay.
At LMR, Leone McDonald Roberts.
Okay.
LMRPA, Professional Association, .com.
Okay, that's great.
Very good.
And I want to thank you for being here, Gene, and I hope you feel better.
I'm very well.
For all you listeners, if you want any more information about couples issues and relationship issues, go to my website, howtobeabettercouple.com. You can access a lot of articles and information and written material about couples issues. And one other thing, my next show is Wednesday, February 9th at 9:30. I'm going to try a slightly earlier show because this is really pushing the envelope for a lot of people who wake up like normal people early in the morning. So it's going to be at 9:30 in the morning, and it's called Uncover the Truth, Hire a Private Investigator. I'm going to be co-hosting with Frank Santin, who's a famous, very well-known private investigator in the Northeast. He's a sleuth. It comes up in my work, the need for a private eye, believe it or not, and sometimes it's a measure of last resort for people who just don't have, they've lost all trust. They don't know what's real. They don't know what's lies. And I think it should be a very interesting show. Gene, hopefully you'll never need a private investigator.
Hope not.
I never have, but it is actually coming up much more often. So I'll be doing that show on February 9th. And I'm going to experiment with the 9:30 slot, hoping that, that will be a little bit easier for people because 10 o'clock is a little late. Now, you were up first thing in the morning, weren't you, Gene?
Yes, I think I was up at 6.
At 6?
Yeah.
And you're still alive and kicking now.
Barely, but I am.
Yeah, that's tough. That's tough. Now, I don't know about you, but we're up over here, we're getting the beginning of, I don't know, what is it, our third or fourth major snowstorm in the Northeast. And we're supposed to get about a foot here. So hopefully you guys generally get more in Wolfboro, don't you?
They said we're only going to get about an inch.
1 inch, really?
Yeah. I let's hope because the way I feel, I don't feel like getting up tomorrow morning and blowing snow around.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Well, we're supposed to get about 12. First I heard 18 inches, and then I heard 12 inches, then I heard 3. It all depends on who you talk to and I think which weather forecaster you listen to in the morning. But we're supposed to, last I heard, it's supposed to be at least about 8 inches. And one of the things that this show, I think, inspired me to do is to get to my packet and to begin gathering all my data, to get my financial stuff in order and to file early. Is that something you would also recommend for people, try to file as soon as possible, not to send their thing in last minute?
Yeah, I guess, the faster you get it in, the faster you get the money back. And obviously, if you get it in early, you'll get it back quicker. Of course, you can electronically file and get it real quick.
Okay.
But, or you can extend it until October. If they come in late, we usually extend them because what's the
okay.
difference?
But people
no
still have to pay money. A fee. Don't they need to pay a fee to do that?
Well, it's not. I mean, you have to pay the tax. You have to pay. You can get an extension of time to file, but not an extension of time to pay.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It doesn't cost a lot to file an extension.
Okay.
But, some people wait. I mean, they're not going to audit you because you file any more likely because you filed in October.
Okay. Okay. And I would imagine one of the biggest headaches in your life are people who are sending everything in last minute and wanting it yesterday.
Yes.
The biggest headache, that would drive me crazy.
The biggest headache is the complexity of the law.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're talking about simplifying it, so...
They've been doing that for how long?
I don't know. That's been going on for a while. But so hopefully that will change, too. And I will continue to work on my end with couples to help them look at the kind of partnerships that work better around finances and around money. And I think one other thing that we didn't mention is just to help people find a way to talk about it.
Uh-huh.
That it's often the elephant in the room, and people very rarely will bring it up as a primary thing. So just helping people talk about it, look at the arrangements that they have, and just shedding light on the whole thing, I think will help a lot.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. Mm-hmm. People like to admit they're in financial dire.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's really hard for people. So Anyway, Gene, thank you so much. And
certainly welcome, Susan.
Everybody's welcome to call him. He's a fantastic guy, and let's hope you feel better soon. So take care.
Okay, Sue. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.